Concord, Arizona.
Council will come to order.
Roll.
Fritz, Fish.
Here.
Saltzman.
Here.
Novick.
Here.
Hales.
Here. And I believe our first order of business, is it not, is to elect president of the council for the next 6 months.
Correct.
And I believe the rotation, which we have a rotation already set for us, makes that next president of the council, Commissioner Novick.
Correct.
Hope he knew that.
Not till recently, but yes.
I see he's wasting little time.
Yeah. It begins. So we'll take action on that item first, and then we'll hear communications. So, Carla, would you please call the roll on the election of the president of the council?
We had a motion from you.
So moved. Second.
Fish.
Congratulations, Steve. Couldn't think of a better person to take this job. Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Novick.
Aye.
Hales.
Aye. Approved and elected. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Right side or?
Oh.
Great. And so now let's move to communications, please, starting with this being the first council session of the year, item number one. So you have the privilege, Richard, of being item number one. Carla, call the roll. Call the item, please.
Request of Richard L. Meyer to address council regarding public housing policy.
Welcome. And I think, as you understand, there's a three-minute duration for these communications. But
I understand it quite well.
Thanks. Welcome.
My name is Richard L. Meyer. I first entered this building as an elected neighborhood leader who talked with Mayor Goldschmidt about how to improve the quality of life in North Portland in 1975. I sat here and watched Commissioner Adams' unprecedented vote against a HAP nominee because he refused to give Adams public housing statistical data. I later would see Mayor Adams reverse his support for equitable distribution of public housing, deny the existence of public housing, and prevent anyone from access to the same public housing statistical data he once sought. I sat here and watched Mayor Potter announce at a council meeting that he would tell the Housing Authority of Portland to provide him with accurate, complete, and timely public housing statistical data. 2 months later, Mayor Potter inexplicably reneged on his promise. He thereafter refused to discuss public housing for the remainder of his term. Refusing to acknowledge the existence of public housing and Portland's policy of targeted, unlimited neighborhood concentration of public housing is no different from the Republican Party's denial of climate change. Both positions are untenable because they deny facts, science, and reason. The unique and singular statutory authority given to the mayor of Portland to nominate and dismiss the board of the Public Housing Authority of Multnomah County and assign oversight responsibility of the Housing Bureau makes Portland's mayor the most powerful public housing decision maker and influencer in the Tri-County metro area. The mayor's choices for these positions necessarily reflect his public housing policy and spending views. Since all of these people serve at the pleasure of the mayor, their policies are his policies. Although it is not a sure thing, Amanda Fritz is the commissioner most likely to help the mayor and Portland's discredited public policy of targeted unlimited neighborhood concentration of public housing. She is more naturally inclined to transparency of public records and the concept of equity. Nick Fish has advocated for non-progressive, class protectionist, low-income, ghetto-building, economic segregationist policies since he served on the board of the Housing Authority of Portland. Charlie, your refusal to discuss public housing with me for more than 2 years is a bad sign. However, an immediate public announcement that you are committed to a policy of equitable distribution of public housing and will only appoint a housing bureau chief and allow appointed public housing commissioners to continue serving who support your policy will right any previous wrongs. If you are not prepared to act on this policy choice within the next 30 days, then there is little chance that you ever will. I'll be back in this chair very soon to cheer or condemn your decision. Thank you.
Thank you. Oh, next item, please.
Item number two, request of David Hollinshead to address council regarding dangerous and illegal drainage from non-permitted, non-conforming driveway owned by Portland Parks.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Regarding the dangerous and illegal drainage from the non...
Rick, could you move a little closer to the mic so we can
hear
you?
Regarding the dangerous and illegal drainage from the non-permitted, non-conforming driveway for 239 Southwest Whitaker, which is owned by Portland Parks and which is currently using Southwest Trail 1 as a drainage ditch for approximately 6 to 8 city lots of stormwater, and which is in a landslide hazard zone and apparently violates all three principles of the state drainage doctrine. I first reported this to BDS 7 years ago. It's threatening our house. Okay, I've got a couple of questions, and to keep it brief, I'm only going to do some of them. Do you realize that I first reported this dangerous and destructive situation to BDS in January of 2006? And their position has been that I need to sue the city of Portland Parks to stop the city from causing an erosion and earth movement damage. Now, this is right on the base below Twilliger. If Parks can ask BDS to inspect its property in order to evict the occupied protesters, then why can't it do so to address the recent apparently illegal construction projects in Twilliger Park? May I replace the historical drainage system on the city property if it's not going to? I mean, it existed from 1934 to 2005 before the owner of 239 decided to use the path, and he is a licensed Washington State home inspector, a professional. I mean, at this point, I could show you footage on my iPhone where it cut a hole through the hillside I could stick my arm through. I'm wearing the same type of boots right now that walking the path got wet. And I'm at my wit's end. Right now, I'm told I have to work with Todd Luffman, but he doesn't seem to have the ability to get anything done. What I've heard is that they need to use a 6-inch pipe, and there's nothing to hook a 6-inch pipe into in Whitaker Street. So can I just show you a map of what I'm talking about?
Sure, pass it around. Sure, thank you.
And this here, that shows the drainage. And this here, I've got a collection of photographs.
Okay.
How many you want to have time to look at, but I'm going to lose my house if this doesn't stop. So I don't know how we do this. Is there any chance to answer, or do I just make my point?
I think here you make your point, and there may be an opportunity for people from the bureaus or from commissioners' offices to get back to you about
that. Mayor, could I just respond
Please.
To you
yeah.
on that? Mr. Hollenshed has a long history of raising concerns. Some have been addressed in writing, some not.
Correct.
And I appreciate you coming forward to raise your concerns. We have a new mayor. What the Bureau will do is work with BDS to report back to the council on the concern and what has been done. And we'll also copy you on a response to Mr. Hollenshed. And if the mayor or the council believes that we haven't done enough, we'll certainly revisit the question.
Is there any chance that one of you would like, it's 10 minutes from here, like to see how a $1,500 expense for income property in the park has turned into something that's going to cost a fortune to clean up?
Well, I'll take responsibility, Mayor. And Todd Lofgren, as a senior Parks Bureau person, has been working on this. So I'll report back to council.
Okay.
Let's
have the Bureau folks take a good look at it, and they'll get back to us then.
Good.
Thank you so much for raising this, and appreciate you doing that.
You want any
Thank
of the
you.
Photos that I gave you?
If we could have you go to my office and make some copies.
Yeah, if you could leave us copies, I think that would be most helpful.
Yeah.
That would be great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks a lot. Okay, Carla, next communication item, please.
Number 3, request of David G. Gwyther to address council regarding bed bugs in public housing.
Before my time starts, I'd like to congratulate the mayor on running an excellent campaign, and Commissioner Novick for maybe setting a record for the most highest percentage of first-time candidate for council. Anyway, I passed out this flyer. The top one is an advertisement for an apartment complex that I've lived in for close to 30 years. This was bought by the Housing Authority back 6 or 7 years ago to move a group of people in from another building that they were tearing down and renovating. Since then, it's been managed the last 3 or 4 years by Cascade Management. Now, the second page is what the kind of things we've had to put up with. For the last 5 or so years, our fire escapes, the outside ones, have been so rickety that they have this on our doors saying you can't use it in case of a fire. They finally got that fixed. Now to the problem that we're confronting right now. We've had bed bugs in our building for over 3 years. All they've done so far is chase them from apartment to apartment. When we raise the issue, we've been treated like children or people who've caused the problem rather than somebody who's trying to find a solution. The true solution to getting rid of bed bugs in any building is tenanting the building, getting rid of all of them at once rather than chasing them from one apartment to another. And probably the expense would be lower if they did it all at once rather than dribbling it out one room at a time or 10 rooms at a time. However, we've got a petition going in the building. Many of the tenants are low income, get some type of subsidy, are afraid to sign anything because they are afraid of losing their apartment. I've tried to talk to the management group, the Forward Oregon, et cetera, Forward Housing group, and they're just not interested in addressing the problem. They say that they're doing what they can, but what we need is some direction from the council, maybe an ordinance that after so many years of bed bugs in a publicly owned apartment building that there should be a complete cleanup of the building rather than chasing. It's an old building. There's plenty of places to hide. And I don't know. Hopefully none of you have had any experience with bed bugs, but if you want to fill up your computer with stuff, just flick on bed bugs and you'll find out everything you need to know. They're actually amazing creatures. They can live for 6 months on one bite of blood.
All right.
And so anyway, we need some help on this, and I'm hoping that the new council will address this issue as soon as possible. You have my card there left over from the campaign that I ran.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm glad they got the fire escape issue. That's directly in our wheelhouse here.
Yep.
The issue of how we deal with health inspections and bed bugs with the county or the city. This is
a county
frankly new one on me.
The county has taken the lead on the overall inspection side, but and Home Forward is not strictly a city agency. It's an independent agency, but we have influence over them, so we'll talk to them.
Sure.
But as the mayor will remember, when we opened Bud Clark Commons, one of the unique features of that building is a special heated room
where
all the furniture that comes into the building goes through a room that kills bed bugs so that we get them at the source. Older buildings are hard to deal with because they're often infested earlier.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a thing that Deborah and I have been working on. And David, thanks for coming forward, and we'll talk to Home Forward and get back to you.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thanks for letting us know. Sorry you're having to deal with that. Okay, thank you. Item number 4, please.
Request of Mary Eng to address council regarding Portland State University rape crisis.
Welcome, Mary.
Hi. Just as a side note, Portland State University is also involved in the bedbug system with the Bedbug Studies program, which is rampant at The View, which is an apartment where a woman was also raped. And Peter Castleberry settled my bedbug case for about $5,000 in 2010 when I was shocked to come to Portland State University and find rampant sexual harassment. It's just gotten worse and worse in terms of my understanding of what's going on. I have some good news to bring to you, strangely enough. Portland State University is finally going to take their rape crisis problem seriously with the hire of their new sex crimes investigator. You may be aware that Portland State University women pay a $40 recreation center fee. However, a recreation center rape in the lobby restroom makes the recreation center unavailable to people like me who do not want to be raped again. Pepper spray is not provided with tuition, but rape is. There's a Title IX of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, and this Portlandia government seems completely comfortable receiving federal funds, but you don't seem comfortable enforcing federal laws like basic equality of access for women and other persons. There are inadequacies at every level. The inadequacies include gender specificity. Rape is not only a woman's problem. There are military rape survivors among our GI Bill recipients that we directly need to reach out to and address their needs. There are victims of Oregon Boy Scout rape, Vatican Catholic Church priest pedophile rape, and perhaps also Portland mayor rape, of which I'm sure you are very aware. I was Googling Portland rapist mayor the other day, and I found that we had another rapist mayor in our past. When the rape happened two blocks from me, I heard a scream in the middle of the night. But the sad thing is I hear screams all the time because there are homeless women, there are people on drugs, there are people out there partying, there are people having a good time. I wasn't sure what kind of a scream it was, but it was a deathly scream, and I was afraid for my own safety. When I got a call from the Oregonian, when I was at Portland State campus trying to interface with the obstructive Vin Beeble and Pernsteiner, who won't even meet with me, they have blacklisted me. I am persona non grata. I am the gadfly they don't want to address. Oregonian called me and said, how does Men Against Rape feel about this recent rape? And I was like, what rape? What rape? I was confronting a professor about sexual harassment when I got the news that a woman was bashed on the head and without security, without lighting, with only two security guards on duty at any given time, I feel safer in the Safeway grocery store than I do on Portland State University campus. And you know those handouts I always give you guys? I don't feel safe going to the Portland State Library anymore. Now that I know what's going on, Phil Zerzan wants more funding, but approaching it through a criminological angle is only half the battle. We need to reach out to the DAs. We need to reach out to military rape experts. We need to bring more resources to the students, and we need to stop this before it happens. We can't have a Band-Aid approach to rape. I have a cousin at Portland State University, and I want you to know that if she is raped as a part of her educational experience, I may begin to believe in God and pray. And I want you to know that as I prepared my notes to give this speech to you today, I was in tears all night, and I was horrified when this rape occurred. I was re-traumatized. My education fell apart as I attempted to finish my degree. Portland State University is defrauding the taxpayers, defrauding the federal government, seducing young Japanese foreign students to come to our school with a false impression of security. My friend down at USC, he said, oh, well, we've got lots of security.
Mary, I need you to wrap up. I know this is a really important and passionate subject for you, but I need you to wrap up.
So what are you going to do?
We appreciate you coming here and letting us know. Thank you so
much. Well, I would like to volunteer my effort and energy and passion towards this issue in any public events or education for Mahuna's new role in sex crimes or anything I can do. And also, I believe we need training for condoms and pepper spray. Every woman should get those as a part of her PSU experience.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thanks. Carla, next one, please.
Item 5, request of Lightning to address council regarding creative solutions for the homeless, and welcome Mayor Charlie Hales.
Welcome. Thanks for coming.
I'd like to, number one, say my communication might run into 4 minutes, so I want to say that up front.
Try to be as brief as you can.
I will. In the city of Portland, results speak for themselves. Mayor Charlie Hales, congratulations on a well-deserved victory. My name is Lightning. I am the founder of the Lightning Action Foundation, which is a creative social change think tank dedicated to improving the lives of people throughout the world, creating solutions for the homeless. A large population of homeless people is a symptom that our community is not healthy. We must increase the supply of safe, permanent, supportive housing units. We must emphasize permanent solutions. Safe, permanent, supportive housing units is one of the proven most effective tools for ending long-term homelessness. Research has proven providing safe, supportive housing first, then services to deal with drug abuse, alcoholism, and mental illness in a safe environment will create a more successful, long-term, permanent solution for ending homelessness. While it is often implied that mental illness causes homelessness, it clearly could be the other way around. Homelessness is a condition associated with increased daily hassles, decreased social support, decreased health status, and increased adverse life events, all of which ultimately are related to amplified depressive symptoms. We might conclude, then, that higher rates of mental illness among this population are the natural result of the condition, not the cause of it. A key component that has restricted us from providing enough safe, permanent, supporting housing units to all the homeless is lack of funding. Although it is estimated about approximately $20 million is spent on services for homeless people in Portland every year, yet only about 12% of that money is currently spent on safe, permanent, supported housing units. We clearly need to improve that overall percentage. In my opinion, to permanently end homelessness in Portland, we need to increase our homeless fund from approximately $20 million each year to approximately $50 to $100 million each year. As Mayor Charlie Hales has stated, we passed three money measures, income ballots. Let me get down to this. Therefore, passing any new tax measures obviously is not the answer. Let me present a plan on how we can make an effort to accomplish this. First, we need to create a care, safe, permanent, supportive housing fund. Second, the City of Portland will create an understanding and working relationship with the real estate development community that we must replace lost low-income housing units when we are developing new condominium projects. Third, when condominiums are developed in the City of Portland, upon the inception, a clause will be inserted by the developer in the CCNR's agreement that 1% of the sale of any condominiums will be directed into the CareSafe Permanent Supporting Housing Fund. This will create continuous and ongoing revenue for the fund. Fourth, if an existing apartment building is converted to condominiums, usually the property, because of increased value, tax revenue can double, if not triple. I am asking the City of Portland to impose a 25% fee to be placed upon new increased property tax revenue created by the conversion of apartments to condominiums, and be directed to the CareSafe Permanent Supporting Housing Fund.
So go ahead and wrap up.
I'm almost done, sir. I'm almost done. The City of Portland will use this funding for the purpose of creating and developing safe, supported, permanent housing units in an attempt of ending homelessness. This plan creates a win-win for the real estate development community, the City of Portland, and the homeless. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Now we move to the consent agenda. There are a couple of items here where there are requests to pull items from the consent calendar. In the first case, those are items 6 and 7. I would like to request that we pull these from the consent calendar for the purpose of taking them back to my office for a little further review before we bring them before the council. And then I believe there's another request as well.
Item 12.
So hearing no objection,
I read those titles.
So for 6 and 7, I will take those back and remove those from the consent calendar.
Item 6, authorize a grant.
Oh, you have to read it. Sorry. Yes. Sorry.
6, authorize a grant agreement to provide Work Systems, Inc. $195,000 to implement the Summer Works Youth Employment Program within city bureaus. And item 7, amend contract with Work Systems, Inc. for $200,000 for additional work and compensation for the Summer Youth Connect Program.
So any objection, not return to my office. And then could you read item 12, please?
Pay claim of Progressive Insurance as subrogate for Jason Gray Wallace involving Portland Police Bureau.
And remind me, Carlos, should we take action on the rest of the consent calendar first?
We should vote on the rest of the
consent. And take up that item?
Yes.
So
It's typically, Mayor,
sorry,
we bump it to the end of the agenda.
Okay.
So we take the regular agenda and then take the last consent that's been pulled at the end.
Okay, thank you. So then action on the remainder of the consent calendar, please.
We'll do the roll call. Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. Approved. Now item 12 then, please.
Pay claim of Progressive Insurance as subrogate for Jason Gray Wallace involving Portland Police Bureau.
And there was a request here to testify. Please. Welcome.
Thank you. Good morning, Mayor Hales and City Council. Welcome to the new members. I'm Dan Handelman with Portland Cop Watch, and this item has to do apparently with a car accident involving the totaling of a motorcycle by a Portland police officer, and it's a settlement, out-of-court settlement, that is being discussed of some $10,000. And it's come to our attention at Cop Watch that since the James Chassis settlement in 2010, very few, if any, out-of-court settlements have been coming to City Council anymore, even though anything above $5,000 has been regularly coming to council in the years prior to that. We're not sure if there's a new policy that the city is now trying to take everything to trial. There seems to be a lot more jury findings against the city where the large amounts of money are being paid out to the people who allege police misconduct that we read about in the newspaper, but we don't hear about it at city council anymore. So we're not sure if that's a new policy. We're not sure if there certainly there's probably been more settlements more than $5,000 and what has come before council, and we're wondering if they're getting entered into the court as judgments, which then means that there's no decision to be made and the council doesn't have to consider them. And if that's a decision that got made, if there can be some public discussion of that strategy. It also is listed in the public involvement section on this agenda item that risk management has concluded it's not appropriate to have public involvement in settlement negotiations regarding tort claims or lawsuits against the city. Now, that may be something that risk management says, but the people of Portland are who you're representing. So I think it is always appropriate to have public involvement and discussions around these things for you to get a gauge from the community what we think about them. With this particular case, we don't know who the name of the officer because of the way the council agenda item is written. We don't know what happens to the person who was on the motorcycle that got totaled. It doesn't mention any injuries. And it doesn't mention if the Independent Police Review Division is looking into this as possible misconduct. It does say the officer was driving in the wrong lane against a red light when he totaled the motorcycle. Often, accidents with police officers are treated differently from misconduct cases, but I also know that IPR opens up investigations sometimes when there's a tort claim. So these are the kinds of things that would be helpful to have public discussion about. Most of the settlements about police issues have been on the regular agenda, not the consent agenda. This is why we pulled it. I think you know Portland Cop Watch believes in police accountability. We're not anti-police. We're for the police being accountable and for public discussions like this to occur. So I do hope that you will consider having items like this on the future and maybe discussing these issues I brought up today. And I appreciate you hearing the consent agenda item first. It was Mayor Adams' policy to hear them at the end of everything else, but it was a policy previously to hear them right at the end of the consent agenda.
Great. Thank you. Thanks for calling this to our attention. You've added to my to-do list of items to review with both the city attorney and with the police bureau for how we handle these procedures. So thank you, Dan. Appreciate it. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Any further council discussion before we take action on this item? Then could you call the roll, please, on item 12?
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. Approved. Thank you. Now, on the regular agenda, we have, I believe, precisely one item.
This, I think, qualifies as the shortest agenda in the history of council. this, I think, goes to your core message about conducting this in a more businesslike fashion.
It may all be downhill from here, but we'll take it. So could you read item 13, please?
Item 14.
Sorry.
Accept and appropriate a grant in the amount of $119,000 from the Oregon Department of Transportation Motor Carrier Safety Assistance Program for safety inspections and authorize an intergovernmental agreement.
Good afternoon. Welcome.
Good afternoon, sir.
My name is Sergeant Robert Vopel with the Portland Police Bureau Traffic Division. This is my lieutenant, Lieutenant Davis. We're here today to see if we can get a grant approved for acceptance. We've written a grant through the state of Oregon and the federal government for a truck enforcement inspection grant. And what it does is allows us to go out and work truck inspections through a grant basis with our now 11 truck inspectors we have at the traffic division.
That's great.
I'm prepared to answer any questions for it. The grant, it's funded. It's a total of $119,000 grant that they're going to reimburse us for. Part of the grant covers overtime expenditures. It covers M&S, materials and supplies expenditures. And there is some match time included in that we do currently anyway through truck inspections. Each inspector is required to inspect 32 trucks a year to keep their certification up to date. Some of the things that that this will help with is to the city of Portland, the trucks that are driving on the roadway, obviously there's a commerce aspect to it. When there's crashes, commerce, the trucks are spending a lot more money, and they've estimated hundreds of thousands of dollars in a crash that's lost in revenues based on the time that trucks are backed up along the freeways and stuff. We also have a loss of life that we're hoping to help curb. Last year we had five commercial vehicles involved in crashes, and one of our aspects of our traffic division is we do major crash team, and we put these inspections as part of the major crash team investigations. So that's going to help us as well. So if we have to call one of them out on overtime to come out and help with the inspection, they can do that at the scene, because that will be part of the funding for the as long as we're using the inspectors for that. And it's going to also affect some of the core values as far as helping with community involvement, community complaints. Right now, Commissioner Novick is aware of North Portland has a ongoing truck route problem, and we're working on that with them currently, not through the grant, but it will be tied to the grant afterwards. But we've addressed the issues with the community, and so this will help solve that problem, as well as another problem we have on I-5 near Taylor's Ferry and Capitol Highway. Several complaints about trucks using their emergency or their air compression brakes there. The overall traffic safety that'll be increased by receiving this grant it'll just add to the traffic division and the numbers of officers we can have out there working. Some of the overtime that they'll work is just another officer working the street.
Were you through?
I was just going to say we applied for the grant last year, and that ODOT's worked with us directly on solving these issues and bringing this to light.
So you said we have 11 people in traffic division that are, is it certified to do
currently,
traffic?
Yes.
Certified by the state?
The state of Oregon, and it's a federal program, but it's they're level two truck inspectors, and level two is just there's three levels, and level two is just the next one up. Level one would be the full inspection where they weigh the trucks and they do the full inspections as far as the brakes. Level two, they'll do brake bleed off to make sure that they have the correct pressure in the brakes. They'll look at the rims and the tires, and they'll look at the basic all-around truck. They'll also do inspections on the logbooks, which is a huge national issue with people driving too many hours on the roadway and being tired.
You have to have, I guess, the equivalent of a probable cause, or does a truck have to be moving for you to do an inspection and you think there's something wrong, or can you, just because you need to do some random inspections, which I think is a great thing.
How do you select?
Yeah, how do you?
The selection process, there's one of two ways of selecting. All trucks are required to pull over at open way stations, and some of our inspectors do go out to these way stations, like the one on Highway 30 or the one in Woodburn and the one on I-84, to assist so they can stay in concert with ODOT on some of the inspections and some of the latest trends. They have an Aspen, which is a national database that they can check where people cross the different way stations. So they're required to stop at the way stations, and they can conduct inspections there. But the primary way we conduct inspections is through a probable cause stop, whether they're violating a traffic law, or they have that's a moving violation or a light problem, so they have a headlight out, or some of their running lights that are not working properly. We'll make the stop on the vehicle. We'll have we'll inspect their medical cards, their logbooks, and do the walk-around inspection with the truck. And that's after a probable cause stop. That's the primary way we conduct the inspections.
So I remember hearing a pretty alarming statistic that out of every truck that you inspect, X percentage are taken out of service. What is that percentage roughly?
I want to say it's about 20%.
Yeah.
They're
saying you can't go any further, you're out of service, right?
Correct. Yeah. And that's there's different out of service. There's an out of service for equipment, which mm-hmm. is just as damning as the out of service for logbook violations. But you have folks that actually forge their logs. They have dual logs, they forge their logs because they want to drive more hours to make more income, and there's a limit. People get fatigued and they cause crashes. Like I say, we had 5 commercial vehicles involved in fatal crashes last year. The bus with the young girl we ended up having to bring an ODOT inspector in to come and look at that rig. And then we had the one up on 3rd Madison that we had inspection done on. And so,
thank you.
Other questions? The duration of this, is this for the remainder of this fiscal year, or does it start with the next?
One of the nice things about this is it is a renewable grant based on the federal and state funding that's available. The funding dates run from October 1st through September 30th, and we just started this. And regardless of whether or not the grant is accepted by the City of Portland, we still do the truck inspections. This just allows us to go out and do other missions and actually focus on certain specific areas and specific enforcement actions.
So it's
and it's ongoing.
As we expense, we get to draw down. It's a reimbursement grant, I guess, right?
Correct, yes,
yeah.
Sir.
Okay.
And there is a certain amount that we do have to have match funding for it, mm-hmm. which we do anyway. It's part of our job functions with the 32 inspections a year per officer. It matches the grant. It covers the grant match just right.
Okay. And it is renewable, so you can apply again for...
We do have to apply each year, but yes. We have the traffic division actually manages 6 grants right now that we apply for each year and manage, and it's just a way to help put more officers on the street working.
Thank you. Any further questions?
I just wanted to say thank you for your initiative in seeking this out.
Our pleasure.
Thanks. Appreciate it. Thank you. Any public testimony on this item? Seeing none, Carla, please call the roll.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Well, I want to thank the Bureau for all the work you do on this. It's a very important issue. There are so many trucks out there that need to be safer, whether it's the driver or the equipment, and the costs are dramatic to people and property and lost time, too. So thank you very much. Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Hales?
Thanks very much. Good work. Aye. And I believe, hearing no other action items on the council calendar today, we are, in blissfully brief time, adjourned.
Charlie, 2 days ago, he was commissioner. Yesterday, he became commissioner. Today, he's president. I told you, watch this guy. I said, of all the people on the council...